Tonight on the Worldview Weekend Hour, in studio with me is Terry Turchie, former Deputy Director of the Counterterrorism Division of the FBI. He is author of this excellent book, In Their Own Words, subtitled The Democrat Party's Push for a Communist America. Also joining us on the line is investigative journalist Mary Fanning, as well as an asset that was used by the FBI. Tonight is an exclusive. The Worldview Weekend Hour begins right now.
WVW-TV presents the Worldview Weekend Hour with Brannon House. Whether the topic is law, science, government, economics, history, family, social issues, education, or theology, Brannon brings the issues of today into clear focus through the lens of a biblical worldview. And now, here is your host, Brannon House.
Good evening and welcome to the Worldview Weekend Hour. I'm Brannon House. As I said at the lead, my guest tonight in studio, Terry Turchie, former Deputy Director of the Counterterrorism Division of the FBI, and on the line, research journalist, national security expert, Mary Fanning. Mary, first of all, I want to welcome you to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Brannon. It's always nice to be with you.
Nice to have you with us. And Terry, great to finally meet you in person after so many months of on radio and TV. Thank you for joining us in studio.
Thank you, Brannon. I really appreciate being here.
Before we go to Mary to introduce the very special guest we have and asset we have, and by the way, the asset's voice will be disguised, so it is going to be changed. That is on purpose. You'll understand why as the program unfolds. But before we go to that and that introduction by Mary, give our audience, for those who maybe don't know, a background about you. I know you wrote this book In Their Own Words, but you were also the Deputy Director of the Counterterrorism Division of the FBI. Why are you being so vocal today about what's happening in our country?
I think people need to understand and hear from someone who was in the trenches and worked with the FBI and understands what's going on today. My background was primarily in counterintelligence and counterterrorism later in my career. And what is happening in America today just simply should not be happening. What the FBI used to do to protect American citizens, the American Constitution, and everything we hold dear, they're not doing anymore. They are not taking on communism. And we need to explain to people what is happening and why the FBI is reacting differently, because the answer to that is all about politics. And the more we educate people, I think the more we can turn the tide on what is happening in our government. Mm.
Well, Terry, we appreciate your coming forward. I know it doesn't come without a price, but yet I also believe there are more and more former agents coming forward, correct?
Absolutely, Brandon. There are more people calling, there are more people getting in touch, and there are more people that want to have their voices heard. The word is getting out that we need to reverse what is going on in America.
Yeah, absolutely. Mary, thank you for being with us and bringing forward this asset onto this broadcast. All right, Mary, would you please set the stage for our interview with the asset today, please?
Tonight we have an FBI asset turned whistleblower who has come forward with a shocking account. The whistleblower is telling of the FBI's repeated attempts under the direction of Christopher Wray to ignore active domestic terrorist operations and plan future terror operations that are coming from the Marxist left-wing organizations that include the Muslim Brotherhood, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, the Communist Party, CPUSA, and other contemporary splinter groups, including the Weather Underground. This asset has come forward and told that they were working undercover, giving information to special agents of the FBI, telling them what these groups, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, these groups that they had infiltrated, they were bringing the information to the FBI. The special agents were taking that information. They knew about firebombings. They knew what these people were going to do, these domestic terrorists who, by the way, were working with overseas terrorist groups. And instead, the FBI attempted to make this FBI asset, this whistleblower now, attempted to make them say that this was white nationalists, white supremacists, so present a completely false narrative. That is what our FBI is doing today, a tectonic shift completely from the FBI that Terry Turchie was running.
Wow. Terry, before we go to the asset and maybe between you and me and Mary asking questions, first of all, what is your response to that?
Well, this is pretty consistent with other news headlines we've heard lately, and that is that the FBI is now chasing white supremacy, and this is what our government wants it to do. It's very important that people realize that the FBI was essentially transformed back in around 2012 by Robert Mueller. And during that transformation, they became a national security agency. And a national security agency takes its cue from the politicians. Previously, the FBI had been an organization which both pursued criminals, had criminal investigative responsibilities, and national security responsibilities, as well as civil rights responsibilities. And that kept a balance, and the FBI was kind of a different voice in the intelligence community. But now they're the one voice, the intelligence community, which essentially feeds to politicians what they want to hear. Very important for Americans to know. The threat isn't defined by the FBI and the CIA. The threat is defined by the politicians in power. And things have changed. And so when things transformed in politics, things transformed at the FBI. They would not have done that before because for decades, the FBI had a free and independent voice, and it followed the trail of the bad guys, whether they were foreign terrorists or whether they were mobsters in some major city.
So if Muslim Brotherhood, which is operating in America today, was founded in Egypt in 1928, known today as CARE, Council on Islamic Relations, but it's really Muslim Brotherhood, their terrorist wing being Hamas, when they're openly operating today and the FBI and our government raided the house of one of their leaders in Northern Virginia several years ago, uncovered about 80-some-odd banker boxes that included the Muslim explanatory memorandum, which says they were here to overthrow America, to get Americans to use their own hands to destroy their miserable house. Therefore, they're here for revolution. And once the government and the FBI know that, they would go to work to stop that to maintain our constitutional republic. But what you're saying is due to political correctness and the control of politicians that have been elected who are now committed to political correctness, the FBI has been told, you will not do your job. That's not politically correct. So what is politically correct today, however, is now going after constitutionalists, conservatives, those interested in national sovereignty and borders, those who are opposed to globalism, those who want people vetted before they come into our country. Those people are now politically incorrect. So now we go after the politically incorrect while we protect the politically correct. So everything has been flipped on its head because now what controls the FBI is politicians, our politicians. Whereas before, they were an independent organization. They were apolitical, and they would not be told what to do. They followed the rule of the law. They were not controlled by politicians. Today, they are.
Exactly. I think it's sad to say, but that's exactly what is going on. You're exactly right, Brandon. And keep in mind that back when Robert Mueller had just come in as the director of the FBI and was involved in congressional testimony, he told or acknowledged to Senator Leahy that they could work together to change the culture of the FBI. That had never before happened, and in fact, that's what he did. And it's important also to understand that when James Comey replaced Director Mueller, James Comey was given a 5-page letter by FBI employees. I am told that at least hundreds of FBI employees of all ranks, and that includes support personnel and special agent personnel, intelligence analysts, all of those kinds of people, they told him the FBI was being led in the wrong direction. They said they hope that they can reach him and get him to turn it back before it's too late. Comey completely ignored. He never, absolutely never acknowledged that he even received their letter.
So these are guys that wanted the FBI to be used for the purpose, fidelity, bravery, and integrity.
Exactly. And yet they installed in the FBI an Office of Diversity and Inclusion, and they replaced fidelity, bravery, and integrity with diversity, equality, and social justice. And they're nice-sounding words, but they are just one step on what the communists like to call the long march through the institutions.
Absolutely. So, Mary, maybe at this point we should ask the asset to just tell their story.
Well, we should, but let me also add to what you and Terry have said, that keep in mind that James Comey was quoted in The New Yorker saying, "I used to be a communist. I don't know what I am now." That's James Comey, the director of the FBI at that point in time.
So with that, we're going to give the floor to the asset. Maybe the asset could tell us how they acquired the information that they did and then what they did with it.
Sure. My involvement with the FBI was initiated when I came into possession of information, videos, and photographs of violent activists, looters, and arsonists affiliated with local democratic socialists, BLM, Antifa, and CPUSA. My agreement with the FBI, after a period of initial introduction, was to pursue information on these bad actors via social media access and attending local events to secure surveillance for them. I set up accounts on various platforms and started reporting on events, tweets, posts, events announcements, fundraising, and pretty soon my work was pretty significant. I attended various events and calls to action, took photos, videos, and reported on criminal behaviors within the ranks of a variety of local groups that were all very active. So I believe I was providing a service and acting in the best interest of my community at the time. My FBI special agents, which involved four individuals over a course of several months, were aware of my conservative political affiliations and strong religious values, which I never attempted to hide. They also knew I was politically active in the community. I was able to identify multiple individuals involved in violent activities, including arson, destruction of property, physical assaults, potential terrorism, weapons violations, potential money laundering, and fundraising for organizations in Islamic countries. I was told these individuals were under FBI investigation as a result of my surveillance. After a period of time, I was asked to change the direction of my surveillance, and I was asked to focus on a specific number of potential white nationalists, defined as being members of a specific white nationalist anarchist organization. So surveilling the white nationalists involved a lot of work, creating additional social media access. But unfortunately, the additional surveillance did not provide the affirmation of white nationalist activities the FBI were hoping to secure. None of the individuals I surveilled were active in illegal activities that I could associate with them, unlike the BLM, Antifa, and CPUSA, basically activist communists. My social media site did, however, provide information on individuals affiliated with another national anarchist group and Antifa outside of my state. Information which was confirmed by other confidential information that the FBI was receiving. Prior to the November election, the focus switched again and the FBI changed the language from white nationalist to white supremacy. I thought that was really unusual, so I asked them to define white supremacy. They told me that the term white supremacy appeared to be broader in scope. Now they wanted names of local militia group members and to include individuals with far-right political affiliations that may appear violent. They had broadened their scope. They wanted national groups, Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, Three Percenters, and local groups I can't identify here. They had a checklist they had received from their superiors to complete, and they walked me through that checklist, asking many questions that were on the form. Meanwhile, I continued to provide them with activities from my original focus, the bad actors in my community. And it was shortly before the Christmas holiday that I was informed by one of my FBI special agents that the federal prosecutor that had been assigned to the investigation that they were working on had closed those investigations and that they were not interested in pursuing cases against any of those individuals I had identified. They were singularly focused on white supremacy.
So let me just interrupt there real quick, because when you use the initials, I want to make sure the audience understands it is the Communist Party USA that the asset is referring to in those initials.
Right. Exactly.
So,
exactly.
So the groups that you were asked to look at and monitor, you said that went from white nationalists to white supremacy. Were any of these people just simple patriot groups? I mean, Oath Keepers and others, aren't they just simple patriot groups that want people to keep their oath to the Constitution?
Right. And if I identify some of them, it would identify my location, so I'm going to be a little particular about that. But they would they were identifying not just the national group, the Oath Keepers, the Three Percenters, Proud Boys, but they had identified local militia groups within the state. And they wanted specific names of individuals that they were hoping that I could secure for them.
Were these militia groups the kind of militia groups you hear about when you think about Oklahoma City bombing and guys running through the woods in the weekends that are wanting to overthrow the government? Or were they real militia groups like that were like, anarchist type? Or was that term militia just being put on people that were patriots that want to maintain the Constitution, the Second Amendment, and such rights?
These are patriots. These are individuals that form militias within their own community to aid one another in caring for their community. They're not terrorists. They're not activists. They're not anarchists or anything like that.
So they're looking to uphold the rule of law. They're looking to uphold the purpose and function of government under our constitutional republic. They're looking to support the local police, the local sheriffs. They're very typical kind of Americans that you would expect. But you're saying that the FBI wanted to label them as militia groups, as in somehow they're a threat to our government and involved in subversive activities. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. So up to this point, none of the groups identified as white supremacists by the FBI had presented as any threat anywhere in the state. There had been no crimes. There had been no activities, no action, no protests even. But my FBI contacts were receiving pressure from the top, as they put it, to produce names and activities.
Were any of these folks people of color? Were they Black Americans? Were they Hispanic? Were they, in other words, you think of white supremacists, and clearly they would not, they wouldn't let different people groups within their ranks. But my guess is they probably did have Black conservatives and Black Americans and Hispanic Americans within their groups. Correct?
They certainly did, and they had Muslims in their group as well.
So when you say Muslims, you mean like my friend Shahram Haidian, whose daddy was high-ranking in the Iranian government, Iranian military, and he left Iran 6 weeks before the fall of the Shah because he didn't want to live under Sharia. So he was a beer-drinking, pork-eating Muslim, but he said, I don't want to live under Sharia, and he got out 6 weeks before the fall of the Shah. So when you say Muslim, they are of Muslim heritage, but they're not Islamists. They're not interested in Muslim Brotherhood. They're not interested in Hamas. So when you use the term Muslim, you're referring to a group of people that are of that line. They may call themselves Muslim because their father or mother are Muslims or were. but they're not Islamists. So you're making the distinction between
right.
Islamist and Muslims, correct?
Correct. What I'm saying is that there were individuals from different ethnic groups, different religions, but they're American citizens, and they're active in their state militia, county militia, things like that.
And the purpose and function of the militia, I guess, would come from the Constitution, that a well-regulated militia is necessary to secure and keep the freedoms of our nation. And people can argue whether the militia is your National Guard or whether it's Americans who organized in defense of the Second Amendment and all the other rights. People can argue on what is a well-regulated militia. But the point is, these people would organize as a local group of people to maintain the constitutional republic of their state, since every state had to be a constitutional republic to enter into the territory. So I want to stress again for the listeners, you're referring to a group of people referring to themselves as militias whose really sole commitment is the maintaining of our constitutional republic and liberty and freedom, and they had zero agenda when it came to race.
Correct. And I'm going to point out, if you look at a militia on a state level, after there's a disaster or catastrophe, whether it's bad weather or a disaster like an explosion or a fire, often the local militia will be the ones to move in to protect the area and to assist with emergency actions. So they play a big role in the community at the local level.
So did you when you gave this information back to your FBI handlers and you said, wait a minute, these groups are not white supremacist. They're all people groups represented here. There's no hatred toward anyone. They are not looking to overthrow the government. They're not looking to be subversive. They're just good old fashioned patriotic Americans. They have no racist literature. They have no literature on burning, looting, rioting, subversion, i.e. unlike a lot of the other groups, like Terry being an expert on Weather Underground and their Prairie Fire document of 1974 that was clearly when they were involved in bombings, or Muslim Brotherhood that is calling for the overthrowing of our government. They had none of that kind of literature whatsoever, and you went to them and said, look, these are just average Americans wanting to be a free society. What were you told? How did the FBI respond to your findings and you're telling them, you guys are barking up the wrong tree?
I did that. I have told them multiple times. Very often when I was surveilling the other groups, the BLM, the Antifa, CPUSA, and other anarchist groups that are local, I would have a lot of photography, videos. I would have communications where they were talking about crimes, where they were making threats to other people, other organizations. So I have a lot of data, a huge amount of data. And I would come back to the FBI and say, I don't have anything on these people. In fact, so I had developed a source in one group in particular, and they wanted that individual identified, and I did. I identified that person. I believe that they recruited that person for a period of time, and then the information they were receiving stopped, and they came back to me to surveil the group again. They just weren't getting the information on the white supremacists because they didn't exist. I mean, they weren't active in criminal or terrorist behaviors. So after the election, the FBI knew from information they were receiving that there was no retaliation after the election from the groups that they had labeled as white supremacists. Additionally, they had information in their possession that indicated that the national groups like Oath Keepers, for instance, were eliminating bad actors from their own roles. So people that were potentially a problem, Oath Keepers were getting rid of them. and they were self-policing their own organization. My surveillance leading up to and after January 6th appeared to exonerate these groups, now identified as white supremacists. I even provided information that exonerated the group oathkeepers with a letter from their national leader immediately after the January 6th action at the Capitol. So they had that information, and they had it very quickly. They had information before January 6th and information after January 6th.
Terry, this is really troubling, and as you probably have maybe watched the interviews I've done with Dr. Christopher Hull, he did a whole study that showed that the government went so far to try to show that the great threat to America are white supremacists or white American males that the government report actually labeled the hijackers of 9/11, who are all Arabs, labeled them white Caucasians. This is an extensive report put out by Dr. Christopher Hull, who we've interviewed on TV as well as on radio. And so they have gone to the extreme to try to build the narrative that the great threat to America are just white American patriotic men, which goes right back to that long march to the institutions. When we talk about the Frankfurt School that came to America in 1933 at the invitation of John Dewey, the father of modern education, John Dewey, who studied the Karl Marx way of education and then came back to America in the late 20s, early 30s to implement that here. John Dewey, who worked with communist Roger Baldwin to start the American Civil Liberties Union. I mean, we go down the line. This is John Dewey, right? And John Dewey brings the Frankfurt School guys over here who were known Marxists from Germany, and they come here and they're dropped down at Brandeis and Berkeley and Princeton to use education and media to have what they call a Marxist revolution. But they couldn't call it Marxism, so they called it political correctness. But in their writings, they openly wrote about dealing with white American men, white males, destroying a patriarchal society for a matriarchal society, destroying masculinity. And then eventually some of the people that followed them even talked about getting rid of masculinity or femininity, just a general humanness. So what I'm saying is when you use that term, the long march to the institutions, that includes making sure you destroy strong, patriotic, courageous men who will defend society from the Marxist. So the Marxists rush in, label them the problem, label them the threat, label them the oppressor, the terrorist, so that they are neutralized so they can take over the country. And now apparently the FBI is helping them to neutralize the very people that are standing in the way of the Marxist revolution, patriotic, God-fearing, constitutional Americans. Right?
That's exactly right, Brandon. And the reason is this. The FBI has bought into a very important part of the revolution, and that's the cultural revolution.
Yes.
And that's exactly what you described. But what is amazing about what we just heard from the asset is how consistent the story that the asset is telling us is with the findings we had during the 1990s. The 1990s were an age of extensive domestic terrorism in the United States. Think back to the Unabomber. Mm-hmm. Think back to Timothy McVeigh and the people who attacked the federal building in Oklahoma City. Think back to Eric Robert Rudolph and the bombings that he was involved in, including the 1996 Olympics. I had an up-close and personal visit with all of the experiences of the 1996 Olympics.
I want to make sure our audience understands what you just said. You were involved in all those cases.
Yes.
Explain maybe which ones particularly.
Not the Oklahoma City bombing so much, although we did visit them to see how they prosecuted that case to get some lessons for Unabomb. But the Unabomb case, I was the individual in charge of Unabomb. I wrote the search warrant that got into Theodore Kaczynski's cabin and directed all operational aspects of Unabomb. I briefed the Attorney General on a routine basis, both in Washington, D.C., and sometimes in other locations. And as far as Eric Robert Rudolph and the Olympic bombing, for 1 year between March of 1998, directly after the Unabomber pled guilty, until March of 1999, was the FBI's inspector in charge of the search for Rudolph in the forest of the Nantahala National Forest in North Carolina. And in every one of those instances, certainly in McVeigh's instance and in Rudolph, we were very careful, very, very careful, not to enlarge and inflame the problems we already faced by being in certain parts of the country and looking for these people. But we were aware of the fact in the FBI that we need to avoid ascribing this to more than one person. We need to stay on the trail of the people responsible. And that was our message. And we avoided talking about militias. But everybody wanted to talk about, well, it must have been the militia that attacked the Olympics. It must be militias that are attacking abortion clinics. No, these are crimes of individuals. And in fact, by 2000, when I became the deputy assistant director of the counterterrorism division, we had never had a study on these people and who we might be looking for. So we brought in a special agent, clinical psychologist, who had access to the Secret Service, had access to law enforcement officers across the country. And she concluded in the only study of its kind that still exists today, by the way, that we need to be very careful when we're involved in domestic terrorism cases, because more often than not, militia groups are social groups. They're people who want to do the right thing. Many times they tell these people when they notice the things we noticed about Rudolph and about someone like a Kaczynski, they ask them to leave their group. So what has changed? What has changed since the FBI's own study? What has changed since the 90s? What has changed is the FBI. The FBI, and I think we're going to talk about this at another time, but has undergone a fundamental transformation where it provides information about white supremacy, about white supremacist groups, because that is now the priority. And that's why attorneys in the Department of Justice don't want to hear about anything else. They are dead set, they're dead on trying to prosecute and give examples of what they're now saying exists. But it doesn't exist. It's a framing issue. And I use framing to say marketing. They want people to be thinking like this, that, President Biden was right. The Democratic Party is right. Black Lives Matter is right. The Weather Underground, if you believe all this, was right. White supremacy, white privilege, and white hate are the problems in America today. What is the real purpose of spreading that message? To divide and conquer and to infiltrate institutions. And that is a real problem that the FBI is now finding itself on that end of the investigation.
And when the Weather Underground and their manifesto in 74 that you write about in your excellent book, in their own words, Terry Turchi wrote this book along with
Don Bracken.
When Weather Underground and their manifesto in 74 wrote about white supremacy, what they meant was those who support America, those who support what they called the imperialist nation, if you will. So if you were a capitalist or into the free market system, capitalism being the pejorative of Karl Marx, then that automatically meant you were a racist, correct?
That's exactly what they were trying to say. And we can even make it very clear. You look at the Prairie Fire document that you're talking about, and they essentially said our institutions are racist. So that was an old KGB trick to try to get people to be recruited, to turn against their government. What did we just hear out of the mouth of the United States ambassador to the United Nations just a few weeks ago? Our founding documents are racist. It doesn't take much to see what's happened inside the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party is telling the FBI the kind of things they want, because they are the ones who are driving the threat.
Which really shows you the elections have consequences.
Absolutely.
I mean, when you elect people to be your U.S. representative or your U.S. senator, and they then at the federal level are controlling the FBI, this is what you get.
This is exactly what you get. And you have.
So we the people have done this ourselves.
We the people, by ignoring what was going on for years. But the other thing is, it's insidious. And it's meant to be that way. And so it is hard to figure out. But that's why the book. Hopefully people can see the words and can figure it out for themselves. Because that's not a coincidence.
This is all documented in his book, by the way. You can see it's multiple, over 300 pages, right?
390 pages.
And a ton of footnotes. So, folks, you've got to You've got to see how many footnotes are in this. It's called In Their Own Words, The Democratic Party's Push for a Communist America. And as we're seeing, the Democrat Party has allowed the Marxist really to use the FBI to paint the Marxist, the enemies of Marxism, as the real threat. Think about that now. The Democrat Party has allowed the FBI to be used to further the narrative that the great threat to America are those that would oppose Marxism. I mean, pretty brilliant to think that the Marxist who the FBI used to once look for, or the Islamist who the FBI used to go after. I mean, the largest terror funding trial in U.S. history was the Holy Land Foundation trial, right?
Exactly.
And now these groups have flipped the narrative, penetrated the Democrat Party, taken over, and are getting the most powerful federal branches and law enforcement agencies to say that the great threat to America is no longer the Islamist terrorist, no longer the Islamist terrorists being funded from overseas, no longer the Marxist groups being funded by Communist China, Maoist front groups, Freedom Road Socialist Organization, Black Lives Matter, even though Patricia Kluwer says she is a well-trained Marxist. So that's not the great threat anymore. The great threat are constitutionalists, people that are interested in following the rule of law, interested in freedom of speech, freedom of religion, our Second Amendment right, that want to honor our borders, keep our country safe, support our police, have our military be used for the right purposes. Those are now the threat. The very people that used to look up to the FBI are now, like I've told you, I moved to D.C. when I was four. My father was with the government. And so from the time I was four until I was a teenager, I would go through the FBI and I grew up going there and seeing the men behind the glass as they were working in the labs, and you could go through the tour, the public tour, and see them working. I went to church with FBI agents. So now the very people like me that grew up going to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, you know, those are formative years from the time you're four until the time you're 12 or 13 years old. Those are very formative years, right?
Exactly.
So there I am going to church with FBI agents. You know, my friends whose fathers are FBI agents, you know, men I'm sitting next to in church, respecting, right? Watching them be leaders in my church, working with the youth group, working with the kids, and I'm being told, hey, that's an FBI agent. Of course, we knew from watching some of the TV shows that, you know, upheld the honor of the FBI, that these were men to be respected, right? That they stood for, you know, that fidelity and bravery, integrity, or that worked for the CIA. Guys I went to church with, grown men whose children were my friends and their father was a CIA agent that would keep track of all the uranium in the world, you know, and track this kind of stuff. Or Secret Service agents. I grew up immersed in that culture, right? And I would go to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier all the time as family and friends would come through town and we would go and we understood the solemn nature of what was happening. Our, you know, our family, my parents would explain to me what this means. And so we would spend a lot of time going to patriotic events, torchlight tattoo on the steps of the Jefferson Memorial by the tidal basin there. So I was ingrained with this respect for America's military, the POWs, watching, you know, and being told to sit in front of the TV and watch these guys coming home and stuff, right? You may not understand it, but one day you'll remember, you know, or be sure to sit here and watch this historic event unfolding. So I'm ingrained with respecting the FBI, what they stand for, the military, law and order. Going to the U.S. Congress and sitting in the gallery as a child, literally as a child, watching them make our laws on the floor. And now, here I am as an adult, trying to carry out and write books and run a broadcast network that defends those things that I was brought up to honor and believe in and defend. And now, those very agencies that I respected and admired and praised, that very agency now considers me a terrorist. Can you even believe this is happening in my lifetime, in your lifetime? And you were inside it. You gave your life. You put your life on the line for that agency.
No, I can't believe it's happening. And many other former agents can't believe it's happening either. I was just 21 when I left college and went back to Washington, D.C. from the San Francisco Bay Area to become an FBI clerk. And I remember one of the things we had to do while we were waiting to pass the test and finish our education and everything and become an FBI agent, we gave tours of FBI headquarters.
You could have very easily. I mean, I was living in the D.C. area in 69, moved there in 74. I mean, you could have very easily led me as a kid through a tour.
Absolutely.
Because you were there at that time.
I was there, yeah. I was there from 72 to 76.
So you could have very easily led me and my family and group through.
Definitely.
I could have very easily walked by you at least.
You would have probably been in the big mob of people there because, quite honestly, the FBI tour was the most popular tour in Washington, D.C. for decades until after 9/11, and it was closed. But thousands and thousands of people and school kids came, and part of the exhibits had to do with communism. They had to do with the FBI connecting the Communist Party of the United States and the old KGB, and now, of course, the new external intelligence services of the Russian Federation. And so all of this makes sense to us. It's the language we learned to spot, to indicate to us when we might eventually, when we became agents, be on the trail of a real case involving a Soviet agent or something. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that people don't think about when they think of that kind of operation is that much of what the intelligence services do of the former Soviet Union and currently Russia and China is they do political type work. And they try to recruit agents of influence inside government institutions because they're the main target, right? Well, how do they do that? They look for people, they identify people who believe in this ideology that we're talking about and that the asset kind of laid out. And so what has happened? Well, our government now preaches that very ideology and preaches against the people who used to defend against it. So how easy is it going to be now for real spies, for deadly, dangerous people to find people who are going to want to turn on their country? Well, you can work in a government institution now, and you can sit in a training class financed by the U.S. taxpayer and get told that your government is founded on the principles of racism. There's something seriously wrong with that.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how much progress they've made. And the FBI, sad to say, is not unaffected by this. It is very affected, just like the IRS and the SEC and all kinds of other government agencies. What is happening in the government is what, for the last few decades, has been happening in America's schools.
And you know, as you would go through that public tour and they would explain the threat of communism, the FBI would educate the public to the threat of communism. And the FBI may be watching and you may be wondering, well, how is it these radicals came to believe what they believe? You know how, in part? Because of you. Your agency is the agency that I would go through as a five-year-old, moving there when I was four to the D.C. area, so four until I was like 12 or 13. Your agency is the one that made me this way. Your agency is the one that taught me that communism in part was bad. I have family and history and the schools I went to, but by and large, your agency is the one that told me as a child that I should not be a part of this, that I should oppose it, that I should be a patriotic American that understood the threat of this. And now that very agency that helped build my worldview is saying the worldview they helped build in me through those tours is now a terrorist threat. How ironic is that?
It's just awful. And you summed it up well. It is exactly what is happening in America today.
Let's go back to the asset. What did you, when you were observing these groups, Black Lives Matter, Communist Party USA, Antifa, Islamic groups, did you hear of their desire to carry out bombings? Are we talking about fire bombings, Molotov cocktails? Are we talking about guerrilla warfare in the streets? Are we talking about political assassinations? Are we talking about any kidnappings? And particularly, did you hear of them about targeting certain people? And if so, who was it they were targeting? Were they targeting police? Were they targeting synagogues? Were they going to target churches? Were they going to target conservative patriots? Who were they going to target? If any of these things are true, please tell us.
Yes. So their activities included arson, and in particular, buildings that would be historical buildings, buildings that would be government buildings. Targeted businesses, destruction of property. They assaulted people that were of other faith, that especially during cancel culture attacks. They talked about fundraising, money laundering for Islamic countries that are in conflict at this particular time. Those were the type of things that I had uncovered. It's important to me to say that I'm speaking out today because I'm concerned about these other things being brushed aside and not being followed up on. It's disturbing to me to see national intelligence agencies and the media participating in what appears to be a campaign or a false narrative regarding the existence of white supremacy being abundant in our country, because it simply isn't true. As national intelligence agencies focus extensive efforts on promoting propaganda about white supremacists, they're continually neglecting the pursuit of overt criminals, foreign terrorist attacks, and extreme activism from the left. That's why you're always hearing about, after a shooting, about so-and-so was on an FBI watch list, or they knew about this type of thing and before the action, you know, is played out. They're not following up on the things that are important. They're trying to create a narrative to play to their top brass, their hierarchy. So I believe that there's an active campaign of dividing Americans with a goal toward chaos and instability, and that it's real, and that instability will ultimately drive us toward globalism or communism. And I believe that that's what the whole objective is.
Let me ask you about, let me give you an example. We have had here, because of what our organization stands for, law, order, the Constitution, religious liberty, freedom. We're not for the globalism. We're for borders. You know, so many things we stand for. We are concerned about the presence of Hamas, Muslim Brotherhood, CARE in America. We know and understand their history since their founding in 1928, that being Muslim Brotherhood. We understand the history of communism. We understand how they've infiltrated our country through groups like what is became known as the Frankfurt School, and how they penetrated education and media. We understand that history, and we have taught it. I mean, my first seminar that I hosted on the Frankfurt School and cultural Marxism was in November of 1997 in Minneapolis, St. Paul at New Hope Evangelical Free Church. The church isn't even called that anymore. The name has changed. So since 1997, we have been writing and speaking specifically about these threats. Now, the point I'm going to make is this. As a result, we have received a lot of threats. We have received threats by email. We have received threats by the mail. These have been specific threats. We had a gunman come into our conference and film him with himself with a Quran and pan the crowd. And he was asked to leave by four off-duty police officers. He filmed this on Facebook Live. He went out to his car. He made a video brandishing five weapons, two semi-automatic rifles. And what he said later on Facebook was 1,200 rounds of ammunition. It took us over 12 days to have him charged because of the political correctness and the media on his side, and the police didn't want to touch him. The police even went on camera in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and said the man was practicing his freedom of speech. Although a terroristic threat, that's not freedom of speech. We then had Antifa and Muslim Brotherhood help shut us down in 4 out of 5 cities the next April 2018. Under no such condition, under those two situations, did the FBI ever call me, ever? Even though they were involved in the one in Sioux Falls, they never called, they never interviewed me, they never said, Mr. House, are you concerned? Are you concerned for your family? Here's what we've done. The man has been charged. The man has now been released after his 7 months. I didn't even get the courtesy of what a state representative who makes the law in South Dakota said I should get, which is a phone call. The man's been now released into the general population now. We got nothing. When we've received threats at our through email and the mail, and we've told the FBI, the agent at the street level seems very concerned and tells me, you know, you should take this very seriously. But when it moves up the chain, nothing happens. We call the district U.S. attorney. And we say, why are you guys doing nothing? Nothing. You know, we'll look into it. And they do nothing. So my question after all that is that because groups like ours are actually the perceived threat now? Or has anything ever been said like, well, these guys are getting what they deserve? Because frankly, I think the attitude is whatever happens to us, I think the agencies now believe that whatever happens to us is what we deserve, that we're asking for it. Can you comment on this?
I don't know if that's accurate at the special agent level. I believe that the special agents that I worked with directly understood my reservation for not wanting to do what they wanted me to do. I believe that a lot of that direction is coming from the top. But here's the problem. Somewhere, at some point in time, the agents, the special agents, are going to have to say, stop. Or they're going to have to push back a little bit. And you know how unrealistic that is, that statement is. But when was the last time that you've heard of an FBI agency solving a crime?
Well, our friend Phil Haney, who is a whistleblower under the Department of Homeland Security, and sat at this very news desk and warned about the corruption within the DHS and that he was trying to stop his known Islamist terrorists from coming into the U.S., they convened a grand jury against him to try to take him down. I mean, his book, See Something, Say Nothing, I mean, he sat at this desk as one of our broadcasters. He was shot on the side of the road at a park and ride in California, shot in the chest. We still to this day, that was February 2020. To this day, we still don't know who shot him. We have no conclusion. They've never called me and interviewed me, even though I was one of his friends and produced his show and had a lot of conversations. Another mutual friend I know talked to him for 90 minutes right before he died. They haven't called him. I mean, so the question is, when have they last solved a crime? I don't know, but that's a very good question because I'm still trying to find out what happened to my friend and one of our broadcasters, Phil Haney, that was warning about the Islamists coming into America, who openly declared in front of an audience of 1,000 people at one of my conferences, where we were also filming a documentary, that he knew who these players were, the bad actors in these agencies, and that he could take the president to the valve if he wanted to drain the swamp. He said, I can put your hand on the valve. You'll have to turn it, but I can tell you what valve to turn. I can put your hand on the valve. And he knew who was deleting the records from the DHS so that they could cover their trail, that they were purging out these files and letting these people come right on through from other countries into America that should not be here. And he openly stated he had all those records. He probably said too much. It probably was his demise. But to this day, the FBI can't apparently figure that one out. So that's a very good question. When we dealt with a local agent over several weeks, and I saved every email I had with him, and we talked on the phone, he seemed very sympathetic to what was happening, and he seemed very concerned. But every time he seemed to try to get it up to a level where they would do something, he would say, nothing's going to happen. We can't do anything right now. He seemed almost embarrassed. So I felt for him. And I do think the asset is right. I think there are a lot of guys coming out of the school, a lot of gals coming out of school. They come from average American families. Many of their families or grandparents served in the military, or they're police officers, they're in law enforcement. They love their country, but they've invested their life now, and they know that basically if you don't go along, your career's over. So I can personally testify, the agent we dealt with, I couldn't have asked for him to be kinder, more sympathetic, or caring. It just, if he got to do what he wanted to do, I think my story would be different.
Well, I think you're right, Brandon, and I agree with you. I agree with the asset, but that's the other disturbing thing about this story. The FBI agent, the street agent, is different than the FBI street agent when I was in the FBI. You could get into a real knockdown, drag-out discussion with your supervisor or your special agent in charge or your assistant special agent in charge. It didn't matter. You could tell the director what you thought, and you could tell him pretty freely.
You're talking about you could go to the director of the FBI?
Well, it depends on who you are, but when I was having debates with other people about Unabom, for example, you didn't have to mince words with Louis Free. We could sit at a table and we could have the very discussion we're having now and we could disagree about things. But my point is, agents got in the face of the people they worked for.
their superiors.
Absolutely.
And it did not affect their career.
No. You wanted to hear what FBI agents were saying. After all, you spend $100,000 or more dollars of the taxpayers' money to recruit every one of those FBI agents. By the time you've done the background, we wanted to get FBI agents throughout the decades that had the guts to stand up to bad guys or to people who had crappy judgment.
So in other words, if they couldn't even stand up to their superior, how are they going to stand up to the mob?
How are they going to go to New York and further our interest and your interest there? And that's the kind of agent we had. And that's the kind of agent I was encouraged to be in my first office. It was the kind of agent I went on to encourage people to be. And this is what is so astounding to retired agents. Watching this unfold, everyone is asking this very question. What has happened to the FBI street agent? Speak out. Speak out now if you didn't want to speak out to your superiors. But start talking, because the real problem is that even when I was around, a lot of the agents felt their superiors were only in it for a promotion. That's what they thought. In many cases, that may have been true. But they never failed. We never failed to tell people how we felt. And it might take a while. It may depend on the individual. But that's how we got things done. That answers another question of why you always heard us solving crimes then, but now you don't hear much. Well, that's because two things. People don't speak up and control their own destiny and their own cases and do what's right, as they probably should. But secondly, the FBI has been converted. It's been transformed into a national security agency run by national security type ideology. And it's totally different than what guided us in our criminal investigative mission.
Well, think about the Las Vegas shooting. Where is that case? You would think that the FBI would still be pleading with the public for help, and that would still be in front of the American people to solve that crime. Has that been solved?
Well, no. In fact, I think they were eager to put that away and just walk off from it. But think of last summer. What have we heard about what was behind riots and burning of cities in countless places across America? We still don't know what was behind that.
Well, what about all the pictures and all the video? What has happened to that? But yet they seem to be going overboard to try to find the picture of everybody that might have been out in front of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, even though they never even entered the building.
Exactly. And how much do we hear on the news today about what goes on in Portland almost every day? People being bullied and accosted by Antifa types who've taken over blocks of city streets. This isn't America. And the FBI and the federal government should be moving in there and saying, not anymore. But they're not. And neither are local elected officials.
And you know the FBI knows who a lot of these players in BLM and Antifa and their money and their funding. They know a lot of stuff.
Yes, they do.
Say that again, please.
They do. Yes, they do. I have video of one particular arson event with individuals on video that have been identified during the event. And they've completely backed off of that investigation and said the prosecutors don't want to go after it.
Did they give a reason why?
It seems like currently the FBI doesn't solve crimes. They manage them.
Did they tell you why they didn't want to go after that?
No, just that they had been told that the prosecutors were not willing to go after them.
Well, of course, you also have pictures of Robert Mueller as FBI director and James Comey as FBI director giving the top FBI director award to known jihadis. I've got the pictures in one of my documentaries. And we have FBI agents going to known terrorist-tied mosque, and I have that in one of my documentaries as well, an FBI leader going to a known terrorist-tied mosque outside of D.C., trying to recruit some of them to come join the FBI.
It seems like they're playing some abstract game.
In conclusion, and we sure appreciate your coming forward and you're willing to be interviewed, in conclusion, where do you see this going if nothing happens? And how have you been treated, or have you just now been ignored by the agency?
Well, I can't go into where I'm at currently in my relationship with the FBI. I'm currently not active. I'll just put it at that.
Where do you see this all going for our country if this is if your warning that you're trying to give to the American people isn't heeded, where do you see us in 5 years?
I already see it in the area that I'm in. It's very active, moving towards socialist communism. I don't want to identify my area, so I can't go into things specifically, but I see it happening, and it's a great concern for me and for the generations behind us.
Mary, would you like to make a comment in conclusion?
Yeah, this is a textbook example of the Red-Green Alliance, and that's what we're looking at. They knew that this was people directly connected to the Weather Underground. We are looking at this Red-Green Alliance that is taking down the rule of law in our country. And when those special agents were telling this whistleblower to change the documents to reflect a totally false narrative, so much so that they then had to bring their superior to try to get the superior to talk the whistleblower, at that point the FBI asset, into changing their documentation to make this white supremacist. Then those FBI special agents should have walked away. They shouldn't have just brought their superior. And if they don't have the wherewithal to keep their oath to the Constitution, then they have no business working for the FBI. But this Red-Green Alliance, what we're looking at is no different than what Bill Ayers laid out in his Prairie Fires. It's no different than what he was doing when he joined the Vince Ramos Brigade and was working in Cuba to train Middle Eastern terrorists. And until the American people understand where this entire scheme came from to destroy this country, they will sit here just aghast and not be able to understand what's happening. And the FBI knows better, and they should be doing something.
You know,
shame on them. Shame on Christopher Wray.
Mary brings up a very good point, and I want to ask the asset. So you were being asked by the FBI, including supervisors, to manufacture false evidence.
I was asked to suspend my evidence. Is how I'll put it. I was told to walk away from it, from the evidence that I had. I was told to erase it and to get rid of it.
The evidence that would implicate groups like Antifa, Black Lives Matter, Muslim Brotherhood, you were asked to get rid of that?
Yes. Not asked. I was told to get rid of it, erase it, get rid of it all.
So, Terry, in conclusion, the asset is confirming everything you wrote in your book.
The asset has.
You warned this is what was going to happen.
Yes, and you can tell from the asset story that they knew exactly what they were doing. They were working for the FBI in the very kind of operation that the FBI does. You can tell by the facts that the asset gives. And so this is just very disturbing, and we keep getting these kinds of things happening. We keep seeing consistent stories come together that provide yet another example of what is happening to the FBI.
What would you say to Christopher Wray today?
I would love to see Christopher Wray in front of Congress ask point blank, what is the major threat to America today? And then we want you to tell us what that threat is, and we want you to back it up. We want to hear facts. And I would also like to know what was happening last summer. What is happening to the rule of law in America? We want you to tell us. But Christopher Wray came from where? The Department of Justice. James Comey came from the Department of Justice. Robert Mueller came from the Department of Justice.
What does that mean?
That means exactly what the asset said. The Department of Justice told the FBI agents, forget it, we're not going to prosecute that. The FBI today is driven by politics because the Department of Justice is run by politics.
But it means the Department of Justice has been taken over by cultural Marxists.
They absolutely have. The people running the Department of Justice are doing exactly what President Biden and Vice President Harris and the Democratic Party want them to do. But they've been working on that for a long time. This isn't actually new. DOJ has often been at odds with the FBI. But today, they are running the table. In decades past, they did not.
In the decades past, the FBI would tell them to go pound sand.
Exactly. That's exactly what the FBI and FBI agents would do.
Wow. All right. Let me thank Mary Fanning for bringing this asset forward. And her website is theamericanreport.org. Right, Mary?
That's correct. And you can read our report on this whistleblower coming forward at theamericanreport.org.
Theamericanreport.org. Terry, thank you. We're going to be doing more interviews. Excellent book. I recommend people get a copy. I'm glad to have my copy. You need to sign it for me, though, Terry. It's called In Their Own Words. In Their Own Words. There's the copy. There's a pen. Sign it for me, would you? Folks, I hope you get your own copy, In Their Own Words, by the former Deputy Director of the Counterterrorism Division of the FBI, Terry Turchi. And we'll be back with more with Terry. Thanks to The Asset. Thanks to Mary Fanning. Thanks to Terry Turchi. Thank you for watching. Till next time, I'm Brandon House. Take care.